Good morning. My name is Terry Williams. This is my research assistant, Darcy Dodge. She works with me. We partnered with the Your Center and Ms. Bettina and Flint, and she also sends her regards. She wasn't able to be here. And Dr. Derek Griffith and Latrice Bichon, who's also was a Kellogg Scholar. So today we will be talking about the role of churches in adolescent sexual decision making. We also have no disclosures to make. So just where we're going, I'll give a brief introduction and talk about what we did, how we did, and mostly I'd like to focus on the findings and then talk about where we plan to go next. So maybe if you're like me when I first started this, maybe your initial question is, do churches even influence adolescent behaviors? And an easy and short answer is yes. So if you take away nothing, take away yes, they do. A little bit longer answer is, well, we know that Black churches have been the cornerstone for Black communities for quite some time. And we also know that they've been a part of health promotion issues already. So with breast cancer, prostate cancer, and even to some small extent with HIV and AIDS. And we also know that religious affiliation has been shown to provide teens with a number of psychosocial experiences, such as having role models and moral direction and positive social and organizational roles within the congregation, and that high participation has also been associated with fewer risky behaviors, so less cigarette smoke and marijuana and alcohol use, higher self-esteem, and especially where we're interested in this, the last bullet point, the less likelihood to engage in sex and have multiple partners at young ages. So then we thought, in partnership and thinking about what we were doing, well, what exactly, if at all, does the church play? Like, what's really going on with these youth if we know that the church can serve as a protective factor? So we decided to do an exploratory study, and I just go to the research questions in particular. So again, what role do churches play in adolescent sexual decision making? And because that's a pretty loaded question, today we'll talk specifically about how do churches approach issues of sexual health and what helps and hinders the conversations around sexual health topics in churches. And then secondly, what, if any, are any are health resources in churches that exist for adolescents to discuss sexual health? And consistent with the community-based participatory research approach, our university partners, so all those folks that I listed, Derek, Latrice, and I, partner with Ms. Bettina at the Your Center at every single phase of this project. So this question for the measures, we all work together on this. So I won't belabor you with that process. So a little bit about the design. So this study was done with two Christian churches in Flint, Michigan, who had reported that they had no formal HIV or sexual health programming in their churches. We conducted a total of 6 focus groups, 2 with adults and 2, I'm sorry, and 4 with adolescents from 13 to 19 years old. And prior to the focus groups, all of the participants completed a demographic questionnaire. So the questionnaire included basic questions like age, gender, ethnicity, but for the adults, there were also some specific questions about their income, their household income. And then for adolescents, there were questions specifically about their past, present, and intended sexual behaviors.
So according to that questionnaire, all of the participants reported attending church at least once a week with their families. The majority of the adult participants were African American women, and the mean age was 47. Among the adults, 74% reported household incomes above $30,000. And then most of the adolescent participants were African American girls, the mean age being 15, signifying middle adolescence. 43% of the adolescents reported having had vaginal or anal sex at least once in their lifetime. After transcribing the data and verifying the transcripts, we analyzed the data inductively using qualitative content analysis. We first developed a coding manual by open coding, or identifying basic themes in the data. We then used this code book to each code the data independently. To ensure consistency, we would then come together to reconcile our codes. And after completing coding, we then compiled the data across all focus groups to identify trends. Looking at these trends, we then prepared to tell the stories appearing in the data. Four major themes emerged from the data. In assigning each theme a title, we incorporated a quote from a participant. So according to the first theme, both adolescent and adult participants described their congregations as tight-knit social networks. Adult participants generally saw this as an asset of their church, and they largely characterized their congregation as a caring and loving church family who can serve as resources for youth who may be seeking information about sex. And you can see this demonstrated in the first quote. In contrast, adolescents typically mention the close-knit nature of their congregation when talking about their anxiety over discussing issues of sex in church. They express a lot of concern about gossip and the transmission of delicate information throughout the congregation. One adolescent explained, "Everyone in the church is really close. My Sunday school teacher is like my aunt. If I talked to her about sex, I'd be scared of my family finding out." Looking at the second theme, participants cited pastors' sermons as the main source of sexuality-related information in their churches, while adults reported that their pastors discussed a wide range of topics around sex and relationships. Adolescents claimed that the most salient messages regarded premarital sex and homosexuality. One adolescent summarized the pastor's message as, "Wait until you're married, because if you do it before, then you're a sinner and you're going to go to hell." Unanimously, adults and adolescents explained that according to their pastors, God reserved sexual relations for married heterosexual couples. The second quote identified here illustrates a pastor's clear prohibition of homosexuality. Even though most of the participants expressed some reservations about homosexuality, several adolescents described their pastor's approach to the issue as unnecessarily harsh and inconsiderate of homosexual congregants.
So the fourth theme that we found was this idea of being a good Christian and what that meant. So, sorry, I'm going through all of my pages. So both youth and adult identified important values such as commitment, responsibility, and wisdom that they learned from their churches and that they used in their daily lives. And they credited these lessons learned in their church about Christ's behavior, in part, especially the adolescents, for their control and their self-control outside of church. So the adolescent, the first group, the quote, "I learned how to keep my cool. You know, when people just make you mad, you just got to think, I'm a Christian. Christians don't act like this. So you compose yourself. So I learned how to control my anger. You know, what would Jesus do?" So I don't know if everybody remembers when everybody's wearing those little bracelets. It stuck. And in particular, one of the values that they talked about, both adults and adolescents, was this idea of respect. And this came up in almost every single focus group, both with adults and adolescents. Like this idea of respect of self, respect of others, it seemed to be the root of all of the other values that they gained from their churches. And as Christians, the participants believed that it was their responsibilities to respect themselves and others and their communities and be of good service. And I keep going back. Oh, I'm pushing forward. I don't know what's going on. Okay, there we go. There we go. All right. And the last theme was what would work? What would work? And this came, this emerged, and we used this quote, this quote from a youth that said, "This would be best for me, these recommendations." Similar to what Shalon was saying, there does seem to be a bit of a gap, this idea that both adults and adolescents are saying, yeah, the church absolutely can do better, and we appreciated learning here, but it's not happening. So if there is momentum on both sides, there clearly should be something that can be done. And I think that this is where we as public health professionals can partner with churches to help move them to the place that they want to be. Many felt that the church should play a more active role in providing these resources and we just listed a few of the examples that they gave us. So one, group discussions for congregants to discuss sex, either in support groups, one-on-one, or as this focus group, or even with a trusted adult that they're not concerned that's going to gossip. And then secondly, just for being a source of information, so providing information about sexual health resources either in brochures that adolescents can pick up anonymously, or if it's on the website, a person can click on it and you don't know who clicked on it, but it's available, and they can go find different types of information. So for example, the adult in focus group C, she said even if they're in a position, they meaning adolescents, where they already have premarital sex and they're now facing the issue of STD or a possible pregnancy, they might say, I need to get to a clinic. I got a list of clinics. I can go right here. That type of thing. I think that would make an informed decision, and everyone wouldn't be so secretive. So this idea that like there isn't this feeling that, oh, it's not happening in our church. I think the fact that an adult said this, it just speaks highly that adults and faith leaders recognize that this is happening. And they just may not have the skills right now, or don't know where to go or how to go to make sure that they're protecting and helping their adolescents. So at the end of the day, what's the role of churches in adolescent sexual decision making? Well, I think first, churches can be a places of compassion and understanding. So ensuring that as we move forward, we help pastors or work with pastors to understand the importance of inclusive sermons, and pairing those messages with practices, because clearly adolescents are listening and willing to go outside and use them. And of course, discouraging gossip. And I know that sounds easy, but I mean, that sounds, you know, I guess not easy, but that seems to be pretty important if people want to share something personal. And then secondly, I think churches can be a practical resource, just hosting discussion groups, answering questions. Even one adolescent said just having a box where they can put a question in and somewhere the answer is posted about it. And this idea of sharing testimony. So adults, we can be good guides for adolescents to just tell them about some of the good and bad decisions we made and what those consequences are. And I think that the youth would be interested in hearing those experiences. So where we want to move next, we're clearly planning to disseminate our findings. This was a really small study. So we want to gather more data. We didn't have many pregnant and parenting teens or adolescents who were infected or affected with HIV and AIDS. So we want to get a broader understanding, well, I guess more students and more adolescents to join in this conversation, adults as well. And hopefully moving forward in the long term, we'd like to develop a faith-based sexual health program. So not just focusing on HIV and AIDS, but really taking the strengths of the church and understanding like, okay, there are these set of values that's being taught to adolescents, but how do we use that as a strength and move forward and think about sex much more holistically? Because it's really not just about sex with adolescents. And I think we can really create safe spaces and supportive spaces for all types of or adolescents who are on a spectrum of sexual decision-making issues. So, and of course, include a parent communication component because they need help too. So of course, we'd like to thank everyone. This is absolutely a team effort. Without funders and our huge team at Michigan and our Your Center staff who helped us, and our churches and our participants, we are so ever appreciative. And of course, we'll ask questions later, but there's my email. We can always talk about this because I love it and I like to talk about it. So just email me if you have more questions.